White Sox fans, welcome in to a Sunday Funday edition of Sox on Tap. It's Johnny Nani here alongside my guy, NWI Steve, coming at you with a winning White Sox weekend edition. Steve, it feels good. Take 3 of 4 from Cleveland.
Hey, yo, Jonathan, you are absolutely correct. Anytime this team can go out there, win a series against that shithead organization from that city and the mistake by the lake over in Burr, Ohio, it's a good weekend, and I got to take in one of those games, so I'm feeling pretty good about things right now.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to get into it. Like I had mentioned, White Sox win 3 of 4 versus Cleveland, and a very unexpected, pleasant surprise over the weekend here on the South side. So we'll get into that, talk about the notable performances, some really key moments in the series that we'll do some deep dive into as we bring you the hashtag analysis here on Sox on Tap. And we'll have a little fun with some uniform stuff a little bit later on in the episode. And of course, take a look at what's on tap next. Washington Nationals coming to town. So before we get into any of that, make sure you're subscribed over on YouTube at OnTap Sports Nut so you don't miss a show when we go live. Give us a follow on the socials at Sox on Tap and at OnTap Sports Nut. And check out OnTapSportsNet.com for all your Chicago sports, literature, and podcasting needs. Okay, let's jump right in. Steve, we sat on these microphones on Wednesday evening, and you and me and Anthony all predicted the White Sox would take 1 of 4 this weekend. They only lost 1 of 4 this weekend in a major turn of events for this franchise.
You have to say, overall, this was, for three games, pretty solid baseball that they played. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, they went out there, and they looked like a professional baseball team. Granted, there wasn't a ton of offense. I got to see probably the bulk of it on Friday night when I was at the ballpark there. But these were three pretty clean, crisp baseball games, and that makes things a lot more palatable overall. And we've been seeing this for the course of the last 2 weeks here. Yes, there have been some shutouts. There have been some real stinkers in there, but that is something to be expected with this team and just where they're at with regards to their competitive cycle right now. But overall, you look at the body of work from these last four games here, it's pretty positive. There's a lot of encouraging signs that you can take from some of the individual performances here during the course of this series here. And like I said, it's always good just to make Cleveland suffer, because that makes me happy. That gets blood flowing into my nether regions, and I just like to see it. I like when they suffer.
Yes, yes. Absolutely, Steve. You know, there's the word haters has been thrown around a lot in White Sox land in recent weeks. We are haters here at Sox on Tap, but of the rest of the AL Central teams. And the White Sox are now 4-3 against that team from the mistake by the lake.
I proudly wear that title of hater of the AL Central teams. I wear that as a point of pride. And I will tell you this much, everybody knows that there's few things in this world I hate more than that franchise from Cleveland and that franchise from Minnesota. Those are the two ones right there. They are at the top of the hierarchy of hate right there. And so anytime the Sox can do things to make them miserable, it brings me tremendous, tremendous joy. I've hated them for over 3 decades now, and that hate is not going to stop until my time on this earth expires. So I will continue to be that hater that we need in this fan base.
As brilliant comedy of yesteryear brought us, if you got hate in your heart, let it out. That's what we're doing here on this edition of Sox on Tap. All right, let's dive in. Let's start with Thursday's game, Steve. And 3-2 win. It was a close game. Got 3 early runs. You had solid pitching all around and some really clutch performances. I was very, very impressed with the bullpen, especially in terms of Jordan Leisure getting out of a big jam, Michael Kopech closing it out there. But it's nice to get a lead early and not let it, you know, get pissed away. Sure, there's a little scare in there with your typical, usual customers in Jose Ramirez and Josh Naylor. They are White Sox killers, confirmed. But they were able to work through that and weather the storm and able to lock this down in what was overall pretty clean, crisp ball game.
You know, Eric Fetty went out on that evening there, had himself a really nice bounce back outing after a tough performance in St. Louis last weekend where his control and command really got away from him. So we saw him rebound here nicely in this start, go out there, not walk anybody, pitched into the seventh inning, obviously got himself into some trouble there. And then, as you mentioned there, Jordan Leisure really had to come in there and bail him out, and he just dropped him on the table right there. And that's, I think, an interesting spot for a rookie pitcher to come in, someone that is looked at as a potential closer of the future here. And something that we've talked about on these airwaves here is a guy that, you know, hasn't necessarily had that big moment yet for this team. That was a big moment, going in there and getting out of that inning unscathed when things could have got bad, and that could have been just a typical White Sox performance here in 2024. And Jordan Leisure went out there, did his job, got out of that jam right there, and allowed Michael Kopech and the rest of that bullpen to then nail that thing down to hashtag set the tone for this series with a big win right there.
Yep, Fetty was excellent. That was a very nice bounce back start. I agree, that was a good point on your front there. And Jordan Leisure, man, you come in, bases loaded, nobody out. You figure one run's at least coming through, right? And even that's like, you're like taking that as a win. No, he said, screw that. I'm going to strike out two guys and then get a routine ground ball on this. That was quite literally what you said, just putting them on the table right there. Big balls performance from there. I got, you know, I think I had to fire up the AC/DC after that. Some big balls.
Yeah, and that's something that's going to go a long way towards building momentum for this guy in his first exposure at the major league level. Like I said, someone that is being looked upon as a late inning, high leverage reliever. We all know you have to attack leverage. It's about attacking leverage here, whether that's in the seventh inning or the ninth inning. And Leisure, you know, that's going to be a nice confidence booster for him and a building block for a guy that when he gets into these situations now in the future, now they're not all going to go like that. There's going to be times where there's going to be hiccups along the way, but he's at least going to have that frame of reference not to say, hey, I've been in this spot, bases loaded, nobody out, and I got to bear down right here, and I got to cinch it up and hunker down, as the Hawkeroo would say, and I got to find a way to get out of this. And he can go back to that in the memory bank and say, hey, I've done this before. I know I've got the stuff to do it. I have to just go out and I have to execute. I have to have a game plan. And so that's something that you really want to see from a young pitcher right there.
Yep. I like the tightness of the breaking ball too. Very, very deceptive, especially on both of those strikeouts that he recorded to help him get out of that jam. All right, let's move on to Friday night when you were there in attendance. So we'll get your firsthand impressions in a second here. But Garrett Crochet is the headline of this one with 11 punch outs, a career high for him. That was excellent to see. However, because Garrett Crochet pitched so well, I think it got buried that the White Sox deployed the multi-home run strategy, Steve. Jordan Leisure, as we just talked about, comes in, locks down the save. Another solid ball game all around. Give us your impressions there, especially with one of your favorites, the multi-home run strategy deployed there.
Everyone knows I love when the White Sox deploy the multi-home run strategy. I'm a big fan of it. I would like to see them deploy it more frequently. It was really fascinating and pretty funny, actually, when this was going on. I was sitting in the bleachers in left field with a friend of the show, Mansu Lee, you know, who takes his X-Machine namesake from former White Sox bullpen catcher in the Babe Ruth of the KBO. And we were taking in that game. I was there with my girlfriend, and she actually got up at one point to go get a couple of beers. And when she got up, that's when the back-to-back homers happened. So then now there had to be some joking going around saying, hey, you know, you're just going to have to get up every time now when the Sox are hitting. So, you know, we can't mess with superstition like that. So
right. It's only crazy if it doesn't work. Right?
Exactly. So being able to see that, seeing that team hit three home runs in that game, Andrew Vaughn, of all people, hitting
first
the ball
of the year
over that fencing that they set up prior to the game. You love to see that sort of thing happen right there. So to see the offense come through in that spot, hitting some dingers, you like that. I like when the fireworks go off in the ballpark. It's fun. Those are the most enjoyable fireworks that are out there as far as I'm concerned. I'm not a big fireworks guy normally, unless I get to see a White Sox player rounding the bases as they're going off.
Yeah, right, right. And, you know, a couple home runs earlier in the game with the back-to-back shots, as you mentioned. But Andrew Vaughn's coming up in an insurance spot there, too. Nice to tack on and give yourself some breathing room there at the end, especially after the nail-biter that was Thursday.
Yeah, yeah. So to see the offense really pick things up in that game, very positive. And want to kind of shift gears now a little bit, talk about Garrett Crochet here. Obviously, you kind of gave the line on him. It was extremely impressive watching him, just how efficient he was. This was really a callback to kind of those first two or three outings of the season when he was just going out there aggressively pounding the strike zone, getting ahead of hitters consistently, and being very efficient with his pitches. I think at one point, I want to say maybe the fifth inning, you know, he was at like 50-some pitches. So he was just really cruising along there and just pitching and throwing everything with intent, getting ahead of guys and putting guys away and just burying them, not even allowing them to claw back into at bats. When he had that rough stretch, that was kind of the problem or one of the issues that we were seeing. He would get ahead and then he would have a little bit of a trouble putting guys away. That wasn't the case here in this game. And I actually had to go back and watch this outing the next day, because I kind of wanted to see a little bit better of, you know, his pitch action, what everything was doing on the night from, you know, my vantage point over in left field. I wasn't able to see a whole lot of it here. And I was just blown away watching the replay of it, how effortless he was able to really pound the glove side, four-seam fastball in on the hands of right-handed hitters from Cleveland, and then working that cutter in there. And he's really, in his last couple of starts, been utilizing the cutter more frequently than the slider. And so some of the pitch mix things that we've talked about at various points when he was going through that downturn here, we've seen a little bit of a shift in some regards there. And but he was just going out there and just being effective with everything. And one of the measures that I like to look at is the expected weighted on base average. And that's really a tool that is used to kind of gauge the quality of contact that guys are having against him. And this particular start, Cleveland's expected weighted on base average was 142. That is the lowest of any start Crochet has had that year. And when you're at that level right there, that just goes to show you they were not squaring anything up on him. He was pounding, like I said, just pounding that strike zone. I know I keep going back to that here, but they were not on anything the entire night, whether it was the eye test or you go back and you look at the numbers after the fact right there. It all supported that.
Yeah, another big number there. What? Zero walks, if I'm not mistaken, right? That's, I mean, talk about being efficient. If you're going to strike out a lot of guys, I mean, we've seen it in the past with Dylan C. Sure, he'd rack up, you know, maybe double digit Ks, but he would be climbing up there because there'd be instances of him nibbling corners and then walking, right? Walking guys, allowing that, and then skyrocketing his pitch count. And then maybe he's only going five in a game that is overall stats wise looks pretty good, but at the same time, maybe not giving you the same desired length. Nice to see Garrett Crochet be very efficient in that regard there. Steve, there's something that one of our wonderful followers over on X from the Sox on Tap account there caught when we posted a video of some of the Garrett Crochet strikeouts. He had a little bit of Lance Lynn in him coming off the mound. I think he said, "Suck my nether region," after a big strikeout in the sixth inning.
I like to see that. I like seeing guys have a little bit of intensity and fire and passion as they're going out there. Listen, this is an emotional game, particularly when you are a pitcher. I think being a starting pitcher, there's more pressure riding on you than any other position in all of sports. You can be a quarterback, you know, have a shitty performance. You know, that foosball team here in Chicago, we saw them have shitty performances from quarterbacks and get to the Super Bowl, you know, back when I was in my early 20s, you know, so that can happen. If you're a starting pitcher and you have an off day, the likelihood of it sabotaging your team's efforts on that day are greatly increased. I think maybe the only other sport or the only other position in sports that is comparable is a goaltender in hockey. I would say those two are right neck and neck there. So for Crochet to go out there and really for the first time have an outward display of emotion like that in a pivotal performance for him, one where he was really dominating and had everything going, I love to see that.
Yeah, it was fun to see. And you know what? I didn't catch it at first because, you know, Lance was very, very animated with it. And he would get the full, you know, body into it and like maybe like a fist pump and something along with the verbal stuff. You know, Crochet was just kind of like, you know, looking down. But as the camera caught him as he was coming up and he said, you know, suck my You finish the thought there. You know what it is. You can go and find the clip over at the Sox on Tap Twitter account there. So that was fun to see. The other thing, we'd mentioned it in passing, but Andrew Vaughn, first home run. Do you think that sparks anything here? I mean, it is the production overall. You look at the numbers, it is still incredibly disappointing. We've got, you know, our guy Beasy says he still stinks even after hitting that. I tend to agree with that still. But the hope would be, right, if you're first baseman, that's a position that you need power from. We really need him to pick up the space on the home run train. It took him long enough to get his first one, a month and a half. Let's not wait another month to see another long ball out of AV.
I personally don't think that this is going to be some magical springboard for him, and all of a sudden now he's going to start being a prolific run producer and the guy that is going to start slugging prolifically. You know, we saw Ryan Cordell hit home runs for this team during Rebuild 2.0. So for Andrew Vaughn to hit one on Friday, obviously it's nice to see him finally get off the schneid here, but I personally just don't think that this is going to be something that is going to lead to him all of a sudden now turning his season around. You know, he's got 1,800 major league plate appearances at this point. I just think he is what he is at this juncture.
Yep. So that, you know, because you're just going to hear it. You're going to hear about it because he's still in the lineup and for some godforsaken reason, still batting second, third, what have you up there. So it'd be nice if he proved us wrong here, but I'm just, you know, given we like to give you the hashtag facts only here at Sox on Tap. Don't expect a magical resurgence from Mr. Vaughn on this front just because he hit one first of the year on Friday night. All right. That about wraps up Friday's game. Let's move on to Saturday. Mike Clevinger, much better in his second start of the season, command much better. He had 5 strikeouts, I believe, yeah, no walks on that front. Only went 4.2, but once again, second start. You only had 2 down in Charlotte, so you got to think of this as still kind of spring training in that regard. The crew behind him, though, it was very much a tag team effort here. When you get Tim Hill, Jared Schuster, John Brebbia coming in to lock it down, spanning multi-innings for both Hill and Schuster, and then Brebbia, you know, kind of closer by committee here, 3 different guys locking it down in 3 different nights here. So nice overall, crisp, clean ball game. And you got some offense from unlikely sources with Nicky Lopez driving in a run and Martin Maldonado doing something productive, punching a single through to get the White Sox second run home.
Yeah, there was a lot to kind of take in with that game on Saturday and some of the unlikely sources offensively that you talked about there with Nicky Naperville and Martin Maldonado. On the pitching front of this, I mean, like you said, they didn't get the length that they wanted out of Clevinger. He certainly was better than his debut outing for the season down in Tampa on Monday. Still had some at-bats where, you know, pitch counts kind of crept up on him a little bit. I think that was a big part of the reason why he wasn't able to get through the full 5 innings right there. But then just seeing Tim Hill, and who up until today had really been throwing the ball pretty well for this team, I think, he had like 9 consecutive scoreless appearances going into today here. So, you know, that was a nice continuation of that yesterday. And then Jared Schuster, a guy that has had some pretty solid outings in relief in a little bit of a more elongated role versus just a 1 inning guy. So nice to see him, you know, kind of bounce back. His last time out against Tampa was a little bit shaky there. So seeing him be able to do that was definitely positive. And then John Brebbia, locking things down there. Just nice, solid, clean performance out of the bullpen. And you have to have games like that sometimes, even for a team that has had struggles the way that this one has this season. You need games like this, again, about building confidence from a psyche standpoint for a lot of these guys, because you start 3-22, a lot of things can creep into your head. So you need to have some of these types of performances right here to say, hey, you know, we have the ability to do this. We're not going to be a 90-win team here, but we're better than what we were at that 3-22 phase.
Right. And another aspect of Saturday's game that I did not mention, like from the other night, adding on insurance runs, did it again Saturday in the eighth inning, right? A couple hits strung together by Andrew Vaughn and then Eloy Jimenez for Andrew Benintendi to hit a sac fly. So, that, you know, just seeing insurance runs, giving yourself just that little bit of cushion is always nice. You know, a lot easier to go into that ninth inning as John Brebbia up 3-1 instead of 2-1, especially considering he gave up, home runs on Thursday night, right? That was his spot with the Naylor and the Ramirez in that juncture. So, beyond that, you talked about the relief, and he's not eye popping. You know, you talk about Jordan Leisure and you think, oh, closer of the future. But Jared Schuster, I think he might be the prize of the Aaron Bummer trade. When you're going and looking at what you've gotten, we're going to get to Michael Soroka next. And that's, that's not been anything great there. Nicky Lopez plays decent defense and just, the bat is noodle-ish, right? We all know that. Jared Schuster has given you very effective long relief, in my opinion.
I think Schuster could be one of the guys that is benefiting from Brian Bannister. And, you know, he was a guy that really was a cast off from the Barbs, my Barbs, as we like to say on the streets right there. I think Schuster has shown enough positive outings at this point here to say, hey, this is somebody that you can include in the bullpen here, a multi-inning guy. The stuff's not going to be overpowering. It's not going to jump off the radar gun at you by any means, but he's done a solid job when he has been called upon, minus that last outing in Tampa, to say, hey, this is somebody that you could pencil in there in the bullpen, and he can do things in a variety of different roles for you. So it's encouraging to see him perform the way that he has. And like you said, he's really been the best of the five guys that have come over from my Barbs as part of that Aaron Bummer deal, which also the Aaron Bummer thing is not working out very well in Atlanta for those watching at home.
So yeah, just a couple. I feel so much more confident with Jared Schuster on the mound than I ever did with Aaron Bummer. I'll say that. And Jared Schuster's value, like you said, he's not going to have the eye-popping numbers, right? He's not going to have like an insane K through nine. Like you said, the radar gun, it's not going to light up when he throws. However, his value comes from A, his handedness. He is left-handed. And B, the length that he gives you then allows your bullpen to be better set up for the rest of the series. We saw it. We weren't doing dog shit against Sonny Gray on the opener of the Friday series, the opener of the St. Louis series on that Friday game. What does he do? He comes in and eats those last four innings after Brad Keller is done, saves the bullpen so they could have weather that whole marathon on Saturday. That doesn't happen if guys got to be wasted on Friday in a game that we're going to lose anyway. That's the kind of stuff that I think goes a little bit under the radar with the value that Jared Schuster provides.
You're spot on with that. That is the type of thing that doesn't get talked about a lot. It doesn't get big headlines when Merck is writing his post-game pieces for MLB.com or things that you and I are writing for OnTapSportsNet.com, but you need guys like that on a rotation that can be able to go out there and save a bullpen, especially when that was at the beginning of a stretch where they didn't have an off day for about 11 days. Now they've got one coming up here this Thursday. So anytime you can have a guy be able to go out there and do that and prevent you from having to burn through as many guys as you have in a bullpen on a given day when things aren't going well, that is hugely valuable over the course of 162 games.
Yep, absolutely. I think that about wraps up Saturday's game. We don't have to spend too much time on Sunday. It was a rough 7-0 loss, but you already had three in hand. You already won the series, so it is what it is. I think we all kind of knew what to expect. Mike Soroka on the mound, his struggles continue. Didn't walk as many guys, but he got touched up in terms of hard contact against him. We've given thoughts on him before. I'll let you expand on it if you have anything else after this, but defense falters a little bit in this one too. A couple of errors, Tim Hill with a bad throw, Andrew Vaughn missing a ball over at first base, and just nothing cooking on offense. Maybe one opportunity early in the game and then just two terrible plate appearances back to back with Eloy and Brian Ramos, I believe, to strand a guy on second base and, didn't score then. It really felt like, this is about it then. I took a little cat nap in the middle innings and woke up and caught up on what I missed, and it wasn't anything special. So I was honestly kind of glad that I did that.
This is one of those games where you just have to kind of say flush it, because there was nothing really positive going on in this offensively. There was nothing there. Defensively, the miscues were prevalent. And look, Mike Soroka, there's just nothing there. I don't know how much longer we need to keep doing this. I think at this point, this team would be far better served if they decided they wanted to bring back Nick Nastrini or Jonathan Cannon, or even if it was putting Brad Keller in that spot. There's just not anything there with Mike Soroka at this point. And they've tried. We're more than, you know, we're 6 weeks into the season here, and things aren't getting better. You know, when Chris Flexen had those really rough three starts to begin the season, we saw him go to the bullpen. There have been some notable changes made to him and to some of his pitch mix, and we've seen improvement from him. He's looked very well, to the point where Boob is talking about him being a trade piece later on this season here, but we're not seeing that from Mike Soroka. We're not really seeing any kind of positive progression in any way. I don't know what further they need to see at this point to just pull the plug on this and say, hey, we tried. This was a guy that had prospect pedigree. This was a guy that was an all-star. Granted, it was 5 years ago. And it looks as though the injuries have just taken their toll on him, and he's just never going to be that same guy again. Maybe he has to go the route of Eric Fetty, go to the KBO, try to reinvent some stuff, and maybe he can come back down the road. But this present version of Mike Soroka, this just ain't it.
I can sum it up, and, you know, we had Mike, a loyal listener of Sox on Tap here, had asked us, you know, what is the point of Mike Soroka? And I said, well, he was on paper a bounce back candidate, but not in practice. That's the best way I can summarize it for you on Mike Soroka. All right, what do you do with him? Can you know, you had mentioned the possibility of bullpen. Who knows? I wouldn't want any leverage. He's more mop up guy, I consider. He's not even length guy like we're talking Jared Schuster here. I'm assuming no options, right? And that means I'd be fine with the DFA. Or do you know, does he have any options? I don't.
I don't believe he does. At this point, I just think it is a straight DFA here. And who knows, maybe he accepts a reassignment down to Charlotte, because I'm not sure anybody's going to be chopping at the bit to pick him up off of waivers if he were to get DFA'd. Now, whether or not he would decide to take that assignment to Charlotte, given that offensive environment right there, that's probably not going to be great for him, given the home run issues that he's having right now at the corner of 35th and Shields. But I just don't see what other alternative there really is. I don't see him going into the bullpen and that being a viable alternative. So if it was me, he would have had the DFA papers already.
Yep. All right. I'm on the same page with you. And I would, you know, honestly, it's weird because 2019 us would be like, you know, what the fuck are you talking about if we said this? But today should have been Brad Keller Day instead of Mike Soroka Day. And that brings me to a point. Our friend Anthony is not on the show, but I can bring in a bit from him that he had texted me. It's a tinfoil hat time, Steve. Get ready. Get him on. Does Pedro Grifol have something against mothers for subjecting them to a Mike Soroka start on Mother's Day?
You know, we are really going to have to launch an investigation into this. This is an angle I had not previously considered here, but you have to ask that question now, especially knowing that he could have had a chance to get a 4-game sweep for all the moms in attendance, and then he just goes out there and lines it up so that Mike Soroka is the guy taking the ball here. I think we got to dig a little bit deeper into this.
Yeah. Absolutely. It's valid question, right? Facts only from our guy, Tony there. I mean, did you line it up? It's all right there in front of you. Wake up, sheeple, wake up. Okay. One last thought, just on Soroka before we move on to a few other news and notes here. Next, if the rotation were to stay the same as it is with this off day Thursday you're talking about after a 3-gamer against the Washington Nationals, then you go to the Bronx and you play the Yankees for 3. I like to get together with my buddies on Saturdays and watch, take in White Sox games together. And we go out to the local watering hole and have a good time with it and all of that. But we usually like to, you know, be invested in the game and want to see a win, even though we know what the season is. But either way, you still want to see your team win, right? That would line up for that Saturday to be Mike Soroka's start. And I told them, I was like, if he starts, I guarantee you the bottom of the first inning there goes Volpe single, Soto walk, Judge, 600-foot homer with a 200-mile-an-hour exit velocity.
That seems pretty well scripted right there. It's hard to argue against that.
I don't want to be subjected to that when I'm out with my buddies watching the game on a Saturday afternoon.
Admittedly, I certainly don't either. I think it would behoove this team to not utilize Mike Soroka in that little sandbox Mickey Mouse ballpark that they've got over there in the Bronx. I mean, God, I'm getting nightmares just thinking about that. So please, for the love of God, Mr. Clean, don't subject me to that.
Yeah, so we'll have to see what happens with Soroka here. Stay tuned on tapsportsnet.com, and we will post any updates as they come to light. All right, talking about a few storylines here, Steve, I'm just going to rattle through some players, and you give me just a quick, like, brief analysis on your front here and their impact, because these are all positives for the White Sox. Thomas Pham.
Longtime Thomas Pham guy. Everybody knows it. He brings an in-your-face, no-nonsense attitude. And I think in a lot of ways, he probably was something in a presence that this team did need in the clubhouse. As much as there was this talk about reshaping this clubhouse and what a good group of guys it was, they needed a fucking ass kicker in there. And he is that guy.
No nonsense, all business, and obviously still very productive player. White Sox are 9-7 since he joined the club. All right, guy that you wrote about frequently, and now he's turning it on, one Mr. Corey Lee.
Corey Lee is, like I said in my piece, positioning himself to be part of this catching solution long term. We saw him hit another home run on Friday night. Had a couple of hits in that ballgame here. He's just stringing together positive quality at bats. We see the throwing arm on full display pretty frequently from him. We're getting close to a point here where, depending on who's on the mound, teams are just going to stop trying to run against him at this point. So Corey Lee, you know, you really have to be pleased with the improvement that they've seen from him to this point going forward.
Yeah. And you know, that was another, maybe a little bit of a spark up in White Sox X-Land today, this week, right? About people, someone called out, said need to apologize to John Schriffen. You know, this is it. I'll wear this one. When he said star in the making, right, the while back, I still wouldn't put it in that category there. But he's making marked strides in his development, which is very nice to see. But I think he's still a little bit off from your tier of Adley Rutschman, you know, JT Realmuto, Will Smith, established star catcher. Sorry, I'll leave it at that. I just wanted to clear the air on that, because that was a point that we had talked about earlier in the season with Corey Lee. All right, we talked about this guy on Wednesday's show, but after another four games of this, we've seen from Brian Ramos.
Kind of getting that first taste of struggles at the major league level here in the batter's box. Pitchers are going at him pretty aggressively. He is kind of being a little bit overly aggressive, I think, in some circumstances during his plate appearances, going up there swinging at first pitches. And that was one of the things I was critical of in the ballgame here today. But that is something to be expected from a guy coming straight from Double-A. He's not carrying that out into the field with him, which is obviously a tremendous positive from that side of the equation right there. And you really like what you see from him defensively over there at the hot corner. The offense, there's going to be ups and downs with this thing, but just keep riding him out there, letting him get that experience.
Yep. All right. I think that's a good rundown of just a few notable names from recent White Sox happenings. All right. Time for a little bit of this and that, Steve. And we're going to have to go back and forth on this a little bit. You have long been anti-City Connect jerseys. I understand your reasoning for it. I get it and all of that. However, more of them are being rolled out, right? Because this is kind of a phase thing from 2021 through now. And even I think into next season, they're going to be rolling these things out. So more and more teams are getting theirs. And there's been some, like I think the Tampa Bay Rays have a little bit of an interesting, you know, with the neon and the whatever. And there's some that look, okay, I think the Diamondbacks have the Serpientes is, you know, pretty clean for like that kind of desert feel, right, for that. And the White Sox, I think it's very fitting for the, embodying the South Side. And it's still very clean in terms of, you know, it's just kind of like reverse colors from like the regular, white pinstripe jerseys. I think they look pretty clean. You say they look like college softball jerseys. But, Steve, I go and watch highlights. I turn on Quick Pitch on MLB Network, and I'm seeing some of these new ones that are being thrown out there. And like the first time I saw the Detroit Tigers, I'm like, what the fuck are they wearing? It is like bad. So I think you're overly critical of these things, and you should at least acknowledge that the White Sox have one of the cleaner ones in the game, talking about this south side that you can see right behind me.
I would say the south side softball jersey is one of the least awful sets out there.
Okay. All right. You know what? We're making progress, Steve. Before you, know, you be very hard line, not even give it a thought.
I think you brought up the one that I like the most, the Diamondbacks with their serpentines uniform there, you know, kind of the cream color a little bit right there. I wish they would have done something a little bit more innovative with the hat. I wish they would have gone with the snake head on there. That would have really pushed it over the top. I don't completely hate the Miami Marlins one. My biggest objection with it is just the pants and the jersey being the same color. It just bothers me. Again, that's college softball to me. That's not Major League Baseball. I know this stuff happened in the 1970s when so many of the teams had the powder blues, and you know, you had teams like the Orioles with their all orange uniforms, and the A's with the all green. I know those things happened 50 years ago. I didn't like the looks of them then. I don't like the looks of them now. From my perspective, baseball pants are supposed to be white or gray.
You know what? One thing I will say, and it makes sense with the Sox, though, with you know, it's hard, you can't do like white pants or gray pants with that Southside jersey. The black pants, I will give you this. When I go and see, the Mariners screwed theirs royally by having the black pants instead of cream colored pants, because it would be one of the top ones in the game, in my opinion, if they would have went with the cream colored pants instead of the black pants that they wore. And then Texas Rangers, what do you do? White on top, black on the bottom. That one, another one too, with the black pants that just rubs me the wrong way, and it's odd.
I think the greater point out of all of this is Nike and Fanatics, they have to be stopped. It's just, it's criminal at this point. Like you said, this Detroit thing, I mean, it was the hat just in a block Detroit. It's like they have some art school dropout that they have on the payroll there and said, okay, what's the laziest thing I can come up with that nobody else is doing? Oh, we're just going to have a script or a block Detroit font on there. It's like, right, Times New Roman and 12 point on a baseball hat.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, there are going to be changes after they, you know, royally screwed up this year with players complaining ad nauseum with just even the regular jerseys, right, with small letters. And, you know, Carlos Rodon is making it change a new color of dark gray when he sweats on the mound, you know, stuff like that. They say that they're addressing it and they're trying to pass off blame one way or the other. I really hope they get it right, but once again, don't have too much faith. And it also really makes me sad that NHL jerseys will be going from Adidas to Fanatics soon. So that's, you know, not looking good on that front either for my other favorite sport. So let's move on. Oh, one more thing on White Sox uniforms. I was talking to a couple buddies yesterday and noticed they're wearing the whites a lot more than in season pass. And that's, It's a fine uniform. I think it's fine, but I do like when they would mix it up and like maybe for like a four gamer of this, like at least one time wear the blacks in there, especially if they're not going to do the Sunday. I know people said the 83s were played out. I still thought it was a clean look, but just something to have a little bit different. And it's nothing totally against the white uniforms, but seeing them over and over and over again gets a little old, and I'd like just a little bit of variety. I don't know. It's a very small nitpicky thing, but while we're here on Sunday Funday talking this and that, I figured I'd bring it up. Get your thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, that's something that, you know, at least for a long time. And I know when I played through college, it was starting pitcher decision on that. Certain starting pitchers like the look of one particular jersey more so than others. I was kind of somebody that I mixed it up quite a bit. You know, I go back and I think about my senior season of high school in 2002. And this was back during the vest era. And my high school colors were red, white, and black. And so we had the white color vest, and then we had the under, almost kind of like the Cincinnati Reds, where we would have a black undershirt and a red undershirt underneath. And then we had a red solid jersey. So I would kind of mix up as far as what color would be underneath the vest. Then, you know, once in a while I would go with the red solid jersey there just to kind of change things up a little bit. I didn't have one that I liked more than the others, but some guys are just creatures of habit. I know for a long period of time, Mark Burley used to pitch in the black jersey a lot. That's why, you know, when I had my Burley jersey, I did get the black one for that very reason, because it seemed like he was always wearing that bad boy.
Yeah, and Steve, this is just, like I said, it's all just a personal opinion, because all the White Sox uniform, I think they all look fine. They're all clean looks all around, so you can't really go wrong with what you're wearing. This is one, if you're going to do away with the 83s, I think this is something that would be fun for Sundays. Bring back the short sleeve jerseys, vests. I would be totally on board with that. I think that's a good suggestion by Sydney Brown there in the comments. Just wanted to air that out, talk a little uniforms. I am a bit of a confirmed uniform nerd, so that's what this segment of Sunday Fun Day is for. We're rolling on, just about getting done here. Did you have a thought on the vests?
Yeah, you know, maybe next year for the 20th anniversary of the World Series, maybe they will bring back the vests for the Sundays. Yeah. We've seen them do that at a couple of times over the course of the last 20 years ago. I remember 2012, they wore the red pinstripe 72s every Sunday. So maybe we see them do something like that for the 20th anniversary of the 05 World Championship team next year. And I would firmly support that.
I think as we get into off season, because obviously there's a lot going on with player performance during in the season, you know, in season, but when we get into the off season, I think we're gonna have to run a little bit of content over through ontapsportsnet.com about what we think should be done for this anniversary, Steve. I think that would make for some good readership over there at ontapsportsnet.com. So keep that in your mind. All right. As we move on in this edition, Sunday Funday, Sox on Tap, we take a look at what's on tap next, and that is the Washington Nationals coming to the South Side for a three-game series. Washington's 19-20 after losing 2 of 3 up in Boston this weekend. Monday will feature Chris Flexen versus Trevor Williams. Tuesday, Eric Fetty versus Mitchell Parker. And Wednesday, the finale day game for that one, Garrett Crochet back on the bump versus Patrick Corbin. Seeing two more lefties in the series, Steve. A little bit of trouble, Logan Allen today. And then you're going to get those last two, Mitchell Parker and Patrick Corbin, lefties in this Washington series. That's just kind of what grabbed my eye looking at probables.
There's a couple of interesting storylines with this. First, I'll speak to your point there about the left-handed starters that they're going to face. Remember, it wasn't that long ago when the Sox used to just feast off of left-handed starters. And it was almost like a guaranteed win when you would see a lefty starter on the mound, and you would kind of think to yourself, why is a team going out there throwing a left-hander against this White Sox lineup? Boy, how quickly things turned on that front right there. There's two particular storylines with this Washington team that I'm particularly interested in. Tuesday, Eric Fetty throwing against his former team, the team that he was drafted in the first round with, made his major league debut with. So, you know, will we get Fetty's revenge on Tuesday night? That'll be an interesting one. The other one, and I'm curious to see how much this really gets talked about, with C.J. Abrams coming in for the Washington Nationals. You go back to 2019 when the Sox had the number 3 overall pick in the draft. There was a lot of debate going on at that time about what direction the Sox should go. Should they go Andrew Vaughn? Should they take C.J. Abrams? Because there was a lot of speculation that they were hot on Abrams at the time, particularly Kenny Williams right there. And so now we can kind of see this whole thing coming full circle here. Abrams has really, since this trade to Washington, is starting to develop into that all-star caliber level shortstop player that a lot of scouts thought he was going to be at high school. And the debate at the time, and I think this is just an age-old debate here when it comes to draft strategy, particularly I would say within the top 5 to 10 picks, what makes the most sense? Do you try to go with a quote unquote polished collegiate player, one that admittedly was limited to first base, limited athleticism, and really in a spot where you have to mash, you have to hit for power, versus an up the middle high school player? In my drafting world, in my baseball world, if you're picking that high in the draft, you got to think up the middle or a guy that projects as a starting pitcher. You can't limit yourself to someone that is already on the wrong side of the defensive spectrum, like Andrew Vaughn, because you have to mash. That slug has to start with a 5 for it to be worthwhile. And we know where we're at here today.
Yeah, it is a very interesting storyline, too, with Abrams coming in here with those Washington Nationals, like you mentioned here. Steve, this, you know, like I said, last week I opened the show with this. We sat here on the show before the Cleveland series and said we're gonna, you know, maybe get one of four. That's what you mean, Anthony Alt said. This one feels like, at least with the way things have been trending, and you know, Washington's still, you know, they're not world beaters, right? They're still in somewhere in the come up phase, right? This should be a winnable series in my mind, but do you think that actually happens?
I am going to do the unthinkable here, and I am going to predict that the Sox are going to win a series. For the first time this year, I think this team is going to win a series. I like the pitching matchups that we've got going in this series here. You know, knowing that we're going to get Eric Fetty and Garrett Crochet Tuesday and Wednesday, the way that they have been throwing of late. Monday's forecast looks a little bit dicey, so we might be getting a doubleheader in there one of these days. Obviously, Washington, being an NL team, they're going to try to avoid them having to come back at some point during the season here. And so anytime you get a doubleheader, that can really kind of throw a monkey wrench into things. But just knowing that you got Fetty and Garrett Crochet in there, I think the Sox are going to win the series.
Steve, I'm going to double down with you. I think they are going to win two of three in the series. It'd be very bold to go for a sweep, but I don't think that will happen because I just a quick glance, Trevor Williams looked like he was off to a pretty good start to the season there. So I'd figure Sox lose that game. Who knows when that gets played though? Because once again, that is Monday's scheduled, you know, probables there. So I do like the other two though. Fetty, I'm ready for Fetty. Ready for Fetty's revenge, baby, against his former organization, and then Garrett Crochet. And you should, there's no excuse. I know, you know, you talked about it's not the same against lefties anymore at this time. There is no excuse to not tee off on a washed Patrick Corbin.
Yeah, they got to go out there and they got to bring the whooping sticks out there. I would like to see, and, you know, maybe I'm even going to put this out there into the atmosphere. Don't be surprised if Mr. Thomas Pham has a multi-homer game against Patrick Corbin. Ooh, on Wednesday.
Yeah. Okay. I like it. Yeah. Once again, it just, that's one you got to win. When I go and look at those probables, especially with Crochet on the mound too. If you lose that game, I mean, it's got to be, I mean, it would be something unfathomable, at least in my mind. That's how I'd see this whole one playing out. We'll be back after that Wednesday game at some point, either that Wednesday or Thursday on the off day. So Steve, hit me with the final thought, and then we got to get on out of here.
Just positive weekend of baseball overall. Good vibes in the ballpark on Friday. Seemed like there were really good vibes there on Saturday. And moral of the story is you win a series against Cleveland. Damn, it feels good.
I would like to take the season series from Cleveland. I know there's still more meetings to come in this one, but hey, you got the lead right now. Yeah, you're up 4-3, right? Because they did steal one in Cleveland back in April. So that's all I've got for this edition of Sox on Tap. We appreciate everybody jumping in the comments here. Make sure you're subscribed over on YouTube at On Tap Sportsnet there so you don't miss a show. When we go live, you can jump in the conversation via those YouTube comments. Give us a follow on the socials at Sox on Tap, at On Tap Sportsnet, and check out ontapsportsnet.com for all your Chicago sports literature and podcasting needs. That'll do it for this edition of Sunday Funday with Sox on Tap. Until next time, White Sox forever.
White Sox for life.